Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Face, a music podcast about music news, music culture, and good intros. I'm Dan.
I am Sean.
And this is a special episode. We are going to be talking about Björk's newest album that's coming out later this week. But we're doing a bonus episode, kind of like we did with Beck. That'll be a preview. We like to do these episodes with artists that have long, expansive careers, so that when we talk about them once they're actually on the podcast, like, you can kind of know what we're going into. It's not something we can go in. It's not a lot of context we can go into, just like doing it in a podcast in the middle of the week with everything else going on. But it's still like good to kind of go over this, and there's a lot to learn. So, also full disclosure, I know very little about Björk, and Sean knows extremely much. So Sean's gonna take a lot of the wheel, and then I'm just gonna ask questions where necessary. But other than that,
so Björk kind of looks like Björk for a lot of people. But I remember in an interview she said it's Björk, like jerk, which is really funny.
It's spelled B-J-O-R-K. If you've probably listened to this podcast, you figure it out. Yeah.
She is from Iceland. Jan Reykjavik, Iceland, where, god damn, so much good music comes out of Iceland.
Like, great for flights. Cheap flights.
Cheap flights and red wine, cheap flights. That's some really good lyrics. Anyways, so one of my favorite artists of all time. She's super eclectic all over the place, but I'm going to try to just give you a little backup before I go into her actual solo stuff. So she grew up, obviously, in the Reykjavik, the land of the volcano island of Iceland. So she started, with a band called the Sugar Cubes in the late 80s, early 90s. And that was, like, her big kind of awakening and stuff to people started to listen to her. Because they opened up for U2. During the Zoo TV tour, when Octune Baby and Zooropa came out, which, you know, was a huge damn thing. You know, when you open up for U2 in their heyday, that's deep state U2. That's getting you out there.
So U2 before iTunes.
Exactly. So before they had their own damn iPod in like 2005. So the Sugar Cubes really got out there for her. You know, she got herself out there with them, so I meant to say. I totally went backwards.
And what year is this, roughly?
When they opened up for U2, that was probably 91 or 92. Let me check. Right, 92? Yeah. Because that's when that album came out. And I know after about that, I believe is when the Sugar Cubes split up. And they were one of the, I know, damn big rock band, and a lot of people liked it. I mean, really got kind of Iceland on a map in that way, where a lot of people didn't know too much about it.
And, yeah, Icelandic alternative rock.
Pretty much. It's different. I know, I mean, there's a lot of personal stuff with her and everything, but I don't feel like spending an hour on an episode.
They disbanded in December 92.
Yeah, exactly. Because then she started to pursue her own solo career, which she would just go crazy. I mean, so basically how she started, you know, from the Sugar Cubes, then did her own stuff. She opened up with a song called Human Behavior, which is, I believe, her first single, I would like to say. And it's a damn good song. So the big thing with her is that it's her voice that is everything. Super, super powering voice that, I mean, just, you know, holds on to you and just gets it out. And it was pretty big in Europe and everything, not too big in the US, a bit, you know, a little bit big. Her albums later on would get her big here, I would say. But her debut album, no pun intended, in 93 had some damn good songs on it. You had Big Time Sensuality, Human Behavior, Venus is a Boy. Damn good song. Violently Happy as well. Really, really good. Kind of eclectic. She's very experimental. So, like, you know how Radiohead does basically like a lot of weird sounds and blips and things. That's what she's very known for doing. So she started a little bit in that debut, and then every album is like a little more experimental, a little more experimental, a little more weird and different, yeah. You know? And then in 95, she made Post, which kind of was a really, which was a really big hit. And had Hyper Ballad in there, Army of Me, It's So So Quiet, which is almost like a musical piece. Yeah. Hyper Ballad's one of my favorite songs of all time.
The album cover for that is just really interesting.
Oh, just wait.
It's very vivid.
Oh, just wait. You're not Deep State Bjork yet, man. You're in the beginning Bjork. You're not even ready for Bjork. She's crazy, but I love it. So that was a good album. Kind of got her, you know, getting more into electronic stuff and a little bit more experimental. I mean, every album kind of keeps doing that, but get her a little bit better, you know, a little bit well known and everything, getting more mainstream, especially like in the UK pop charts and stuff, which is pretty cool. Then you have Homogenic, which is one of the best albums ever made, in my opinion.
Wow.
Which was released in 97, which from top to bottom is one of those perfect albums where every song is the perfect amount of length. Every song is right where it needs to be. You have Yoga, Unravel, 5 Years, Alarm Call, All Is Full of Love. And this is where she has one of the most hauntingly beautiful songs ever, which I think is still Tom York's favorite song ever. Like, he said that a couple of times, just Unravel. And then she has super experimental electronic songs in mixed in with this quiet, hauntingly beautiful piece, and it kind of ties in the whole album together, and it's just wonderful to listen to. It came out, it had its 20th anniversary what, 2 months ago or month and a half ago, I remember. On Morning Co's Eclectic, they were talking about them, like, holy shit, I should listen to Homogenic again for the hell of it, and god, it's so good. Let me know if you have any questions, by the way.
Oh, no. I'm still, like, kind of, like, listening and following along with this, and this also cool. Looking at the album covers.
Her album covers are wild and cool.
Yeah. Like, I absolutely implore the listener to just, like, look at all the album covers, like, as Sean is describing these albums. So I think there's also, like, an evolution in the look as well that I'm starting to see, along with the evolution of the music.
Yeah. I mean, this is the album that really got her well-known in the U.S., basically. So, and then also when she was at the Academy Awards in a swan dress, that's what really got her known, too, because one thing of Bjork is she wears, heck, her aesthetic is freaking eclectic.
Extravagant.
Weird as hell. Avant-garde to the maximum. Where you don't know what the fuck she's wearing. But, I mean, that was it. That's what really got her out there. But she was there because of, I believe, because of Dancer in the Dark. Which, cause she also does a lot of acting roles in a few movies and stuff. I mean, she actually did a song with Tom York. Shit, I can't think of the film. But anyways, so she did that, Dance in the Dark, and then she had Vespertine, which was when was that? 01 maybe, or 02?
I've Seen It All was a song with Bjork.
I've Seen It All is the song that Tom York and Bjork did together.
That was Bjork.
Tom Bjork, right, dude. That would have been hilarious. Anyways, so Vespertine came out. Which was
2001, right?
Yeah, 2001. It was really, really big in, like, backing vocals and choirs and chamber groups and stuff in that way, where we had a lot of different sounds compared to her experimental side, where usually the past three albums were getting more and more eclectic each time, a little bit more experimental, more electronic. This one was kind of stripped back in that way. I mean, still had her relative sound, but it was really, really quiet compared to the other albums.
Right.
I liked it, but it was a bit different compared to her other stuff. And it was cool. I liked it. Different ideas, trying to work with orchestras and totally different sounds. And that's the thing I love about Bjork all the time, is that she's always trying different things. Always saying, all right, let's try this and do something different. And then a couple years later, what, 04, she released Medulla, which was really big in more electronic stuff.
That's an interesting
cover. Oh yeah, that's what you just wait, dog. It gets weirder and weirder. So like I know. Yeah, this one is definitely. This is when she started to go into a bit longer of albums, having more songs instead of cutting stuff, because I know originally for that she was thinking of doing like an acoustic type of album and then decided against it. I remember she talked about that years ago. And so this one was really heavy electronic, this and that, pretty cool, different. I liked it. Triumph of Heart is probably my favorite song on that. It's really cool. And Pleasure is All Mine, which is the opening track. I haven't listened to that in for a while, but still damn good.
Okay, so hold. I just want to point out the credits to this album, because I'm just like looking on Wikipedia. There's an Icelandic choir. There's a London choir. There's a someone with a gong. There's a bunch of beatboxers and someone who does Inuit throat singing.
It's kind of cool.
It's so wild, and she makes it all work in an album that was just very well critically acclaimed. And I've also been looking at like the chart positions, and you know, it's kind of this thing that always happens with international artists, international in an American centric kind of way, because it is America centric for now, but it's always really hard for international artists to break the charts in America. I was looking at some of Björk's earlier albums, and it was like charting at 28, which is really good for an international artist, especially like an Icelandic artist that's like probably unheard of. But now we're at Medulla, and it's peaking US charts number 14. In a lot of other places, it's like number one, especially closer in Europe. In UK, it's number nine. And obviously, it's ranking on the charts is not necessarily like how good of an album it is, right?
No, clearly, no. Things,
ranking on charts are shit. But it's also...
Seriously.
To make a point about like cultural relevance and the power of like that music to transcend like cultures that far. It's I think that's a cool thing to point out.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like her stuff would top charts here and everything. It took a little while to get there, but I mean really with a lot of her antics and stuff at the red carpet and other things, people kinda got out and be like, oh, she's the weird really good singer. It's the best way to put it. People who don't know her. Yeah, for the Academy Awards. That's why she was in the swan dress. Yeah. So I know she opened up the ceremony. It was one of the opening acts for the 2004 Olympics. Like she had like a big dress thing and whatnot going around. I remember that. I don't remember what song she performed. But that was a big thing too. Same year as Medulla came out.
Yeah.
Then, she did like an experimental weird album with her then partner Matthew Barney. I don't know much about that. I don't think I've really even listened to it, to be honest. Or like I probably did, but I don't remember much. You see the album. Then in 2007 came out Volta, which really, really eclectic and weird. This is when it gets fun.
So musically, let me just pause really quickly. Musically, from like 2000 to this point of Volta, 2007, we've kind of still been sticking in an electronic pop range? Or, like, what's really changed from, like, 2000
to every time, it's basically, what happens is she gets her hands on new technology. It's every year, like, it's on and on, she has different ways of making new beats, new sounds, and to tie it in with her overpowering vocals. Basically, you have to really listen to it to get an understanding of it, where her voice is so powerful, but she will team up with these producers and musicians that make just so, like, tie it all in together, and it sounds beautiful. Volta was kind of that, where it started to get crazy and weird, and now she's like, I don't care what people think about me, really. Like, let's just make some damn good music and make it weird. See what I can do. Boy, if I can fucking talk.
No, I was just gonna say that that is, I think that's the best point a musician can get to, their fuck it point. Because when a musician stops caring about, like, perception or view, you usually get a good thing coming out. You either get their music at their worst, in which case, like, it's natural selection. No one's going to listen to it. It fades into irrelevance. Or you get that artist at their best. And then, like, again, going off of that arbitrary chart thing I was talking about, this one charted number 9 on Billboard. And then was number 1 for U.S. digital albums, number 2 for digital for rock albums, number 1 for electronic. And then, of course, killing it in the rest of the world. Top 20, even top 10 just about everywhere else.
Yeah, that's one of her more popular albums at that time. It was Volta. You have Voltaic, which is kind of a smaller album. So the thing with Björk is she's released a lot of music, and it's like you have kind of the major albums, then you have smaller, like, mini albums, not even EPs, as I would say, but not as big releases, if that makes any sense. Like, she has a lot of live stuff and things that she does.
Right. And a lot of, I was looking at Voltaic, and that's...
It's not...
Voltaic's, like, live.
Yeah, exactly. Because then you have Biophilia, which has one of my favorite pump-up songs ever, which is Natura, which has, like, this crazy fucking fast drum beat going, and is awesome. Again, super eclectic, weird, as always. Really, really big in electronic music and this and that. I mean, look at her album cover. It's fucking wild. Oh, really, really good album. It was cool. Moon was good. The whole album. A little bit longer, too. Getting more and more into that. And that was 2011? Yeah, 2011. Jesus Christ. Different, a little bit more heavy, more heavily produced, if that makes any sense.
How heavily produced, how so? Like,
it's just, again, it's when you have more when you have more technology at her disposal. She was, like, working with more musicians and trying a lot more heavy drum beats and stuff instead of just focusing on electronic stuff. A little more instruments, but mixed in with everything. So still very eclectic and weird, just to say the best. I love it.
Was it, so this album, again, like, arbitrary thing, I'm noticing it didn't chart as much, but also, like, some of the visuals related to it.
The Biophilia?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, for Biophilia. It looks like there was a game with this or something.
There's, like, a little app thing that you could get, I think. This is so long ago. This is high school for us. I remember
in the school. Oh, yeah, this is a visualizer thing.
You remember how Tomorrow's Modern Boxes had that weird visualizer thing, basically?
I was just about to compare it, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to that, where Tomorrow's Modern Boxes, I think Tom York got the idea from this, if I'm not mistaken.
I wouldn't be surprised.
But Tom York did it and made it really cool and a bit different. And this was, like, kind of the first thing to really try and use interactive apps along with, and, interactive apps to try and go along with the album. I think it was one of the first album, or if not the first album, to really do that. Because I remember when that talked about when she did that, everybody's like, what the fuck? Like, that's cool. But this is, you know, in the dawn of the app age, basically, you know?
Yeah. So I'm reading here that Bjork composed as like a concept album, exploring the links between music, nature, and technology.
So if you think of it...
She composed part of it on an iPad, which is like sort of a Damon Albarn thing too.
That literally about to say that. So Biophilia is really similar to The Fall, where that's what I mean, a bit more produced, a bit different than all the other stuff. Very, very experimental. This is where the thing with Bjork is that she's done big, super heavy albums, and then she's done a lot of experimental, smaller albums that won't chart as much, but she's just trying new shit. And then another one, it'll be like in-betweeners, you know? And then you have Vulnicura, which came out 2 years ago in 2015, which is the big album, you know, where it's that really, really good put together. Not too experimental, still has her voice and everything in it, but is very, very clean and polished compared to Biophilia or other stuff. You know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But Vulnicura came out and is... It's a powerful album, dude. It's really, really good. Haunting and lots of
strings. I remember the album cover for this. I do.
Yeah. It's very big in... Basically, it's like her breakup album. Really is the best way to put it. Because her and her partner... I'm not going to think of his damn name... Matthews, I believe, they parted ways in 2014, 2015, and had this, and it's just gorgeous and sad and beautiful in its own way.
Is it one of those albums that just like really has a lot of depth?
Super emotionally? So much depth, so much emotion is in this album. The first song, Stone Milker, is gorgeous with backing violinists and drum machines, and it's like Unravel and Homogenic. It's that type of beautiful haunting song that that not many people can make. And then after that, then you just have Lion Song, which is this experimental crazy song which has a really weird music video to go along with it. But the album in general is very, very good. I remember when it came out and it's like, wow, this is cool. Adam Dance is good too, and History of Touches.
Yeah.
And then she's just done life stuff, and now we're waiting for her latest album, which is Utopia, which I've heard is more happy compared to Vulnicura, which I'm looking forward to. Because in the interview that I heard in May, she seemed a bit happier and everything, like, good after parting ways and... you know, was more social in this, what, you know, as you do after you lose someone dear to you. And I'm looking forward to it and see what happy songs she can make, because some of that stuff is really good. But I mean, the best way I can kind of put her as is very eclectic and different and very, yeah, very true to herself, not corny whatsoever. Very, very unique. You know, there's only one Bjork. Just wears the craziest costumes on stage and has one of the most unique, powerful voices out there in music.
So very big on, like, I guess this makes sense, like, sensual stimulation. Like, of the senses. Like, a lot of Bjork's, like, work is very visually, like, lots of information packed visually and lots of information packed in the audio, and then
It's a whole experience is the best way to put it. Like, there's not, it's like not just one thing about it, it's everything. It's one of those people where it can be too much at times, you know, where it's just boom in your face.
Yeah. And I can imagine that might be where like maybe some of the downsides to Bjork's albums may have come from, because at least with Beck, and what I've been seeing from some of, just reading over some of the reviews kind of quickly, is that maybe it seemed like the experimentation got to a certain point where maybe even for a moment, around the time of maybe like between Medulla to Biophilia, where the experimentation almost became too much, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's definitely happened.
And then it became a story of how do you
backtrack rein that in. Almost.
Because I think every experimental, like Radiohead has had this, Beck has had this, gorillas might be kind of having it right now. I think humans might be that moment for gorillas where Damon realizes, okay, if that's what happens when I let it go a little bit too far, now I need to add refinement to the mix. Because I think refinement is an important part of music as well. You can do a lot of crazy things, but how do you make sure those crazy things just don't turn into like a mixed soup of things that don't like work together, I guess? Because music still has to work
as a piece. And that's where Vulnakura comes in, as that 2 years ago, it's just polished. Everything is good in there, where she sounds like some of her earlier works in the 90s, where it's that experimental stuff, but it's not overblown in your face. And it's beautiful in that way, where it's like you know, after being in the music industry for, over 30 years, you kind of figure it out. So that's what I'm looking forward to, Utopia. I want to see, with even more technology, even more people out there helping you with it, what the hell are you going to do? The two songs I've heard so far have been pretty well, so I'm looking forward to it, and we'll do a full review on it when it comes out.
Next week.
Stay tuned here.
That's exciting. And I haven't heard much of Bjork, like, at all, even. Like, just a couple songs.
Honestly, I'll show you some when you're here, too. When we go to LA, I'll put on some of it in the car, so you can get a sense of it.
That's going to be good. Really dope. I can't wait. Yeah.
It's going to be a good time. So, that's it. That's my little quick kind of discography on it, just so I can have some people, if they want to, listen to it before, because she's definitely one of those artists you don't just jump into. You gotta kind of pick your thing and figure it out, because there's so much backlog. I mean, it's over 30 years of music, so it's a lot.
Bjork is... I'm just gonna go through some of Bjork's, like, awards.
So many, dog.
Let's see. Or like Solan has described her as the most important and forward-thinking musician of our generation. Deadspin says the best non-pop female vocalist of the last 30 years. 29th in VH1's 100 Greatest Women in Music. 8th in MTV's 22 Greatest Voices in Music. 60th in Rolling Stone's 100 Greatest Singers in All Time. Was in NPR's 50 Great Voices, 5 Brit Awards, 4 MTV Video Music Awards, a Mojo Award, 3 UK Music Video Awards, 21 Icelandic Music Video Awards, 14 Grammys, 1 Academy Award, 2 Golden Globes. Like, just a fucking tour de force, this woman is.
Yeah, no, I mean, and rightly so, everything that she's done is earned, basically.
It's what you like to see.
Yeah. Well.
Thank you very much for getting us fucking learned over here.
Right? Don't sleep on my music knowledge, guys. I'm also really tired now. I mean, we've been talking for almost 3 hours.
Yeah, we just Joe Rogan experienced.
Yeah. Joe Rogan does this every day.
With Alpha Brain, dude. Right. Alpha Brain and a lot more money, but for the people.
For the people. All right. Well, that concludes that. And, come back here and see what's up, and
we'll see how episode. This next album is. We'll review it. We'll go into it with all the knowledge we have, and now you'll have some context. Follow Sean on Twitter and Instagram at SWSuarez. I'm on Twitter at Dan from the Web, on Instagram at Dan from the Internet, and also on Facebook at Dan from the Internet. Also plugging Facebook more too. Check out the We Made It podcast on the Syndicate 23 Network. Miscellaneous soccer, great things, and also just like the same real talk that we apply to music, where you know you never know what our opinions are going to be. We're going to be skeptical to a certain extent, but we really care about music as an art. They apply the same thing for soccer, for football, for that great sport. Also, fastest growing podcast on the We Made It podcast, on the Syndicate 23 Network by far. I'm also tired too. Thank you for listening, Sean. Thanks for joining me on this.
All right, guys. Thanks.
See you later this week for the Bjork episode.
Cheers. Bye.